Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
That border wall keeps us safe. We've seen it here in Arizona because we've seen those areas where the border wall is there and people aren't coming through. Where there are gaps in it, people are pouring through.
I think a border wall is important to a security package, but it also has to be coupled with technology, manpower, and then laws that come behind that. So this is why it was important that the border security compromise bill passed, because it had a lot of those elements.
If you want a secure southern border, if you want to lower the prices of groceries, if you want to lower the price of housing in this country, you're welcome to vote for Donald J. Trump for president, because he's the person who's actually going to fix those problems.
This group with Donald Trump, when they mean freedom, they mean that they should be free to invade your exam room, to invade your school library, to invade your bedroom, and have government be just small enough to be in every damn part of your life that they shouldn't be.
The election is here, and we've got to energize and organize and mobilize. And please, let's always remember, your vote is your voice.
No one knows how many even ballots they're bringing to their county. So this is a blind test to the county officials.
And joining me to talk about the presidential and vice presidential candidates campaigning in Arizona this week, the first and only debate between U.S. Senate hopefuls Ruben Gallego and Carrie Lake, and more, our former state lawmaker Regina Cobb. Regina, good morning.
Good morning.
And Mike Hayner of Lumen Strategies. Mike, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, Regina, lots of candidates coming to Arizona. We heard several of them just a moment ago. Former President Trump will be in Prescott Valley a little bit later on. Surrogates, celebrities, all sorts of people coming to Arizona.
Well, we are a state that is the transitional state for the presidential election. We are probably the key piece. So I can see that happening. And it doesn't surprise me that there is a lot of traffic here.
Do you think visits like that make a difference?
No, I don't.
How come?
I think it's a showpiece for the candidates. I don't think it's actually anything that makes a difference. I think the people are listening to what the candidates are about and what their issues are, and they've already made up their mind. I don't think someone coming to a community is going to make a difference.
Mike, do you think these kind of visits make a difference?
I do. I think that they energize the folks that are supportive of those candidates. When there are events that are energetic and the candidates are showing that enthusiasm as well, I think that leads people to go out and knock on more doors and make more phone calls.
I wonder if they're maybe more effective in a place like Arizona right now, when people could, in theory, go home and vote, as opposed to, you know, having an event and waiting 3 or 4 weeks and then having to vote, you know, and maybe forget that they went to the thing.
Definitely. I think early voting is over 85% of Arizonans vote early, and that's helpful. And so, again, if you go to one of those rallies, if you hear one of those speakers, if you're energized to go vote, and that ballot's sitting on your kitchen counter, maybe you just go home and vote and you're done with it and you move on from there.
Regina, I'm curious if there's anything to be read into the places where candidates are going. For example, Vice President Harris was in Chandler. Former President Trump will be up in Prescott Valley, north of the valley, when he's here in a little bit. Like, should we be looking at the places that the candidates are going?
Well, looking at, let's say, Trump going to the Prescott or in Yavapai. I think that you're trying to rally your base. And what Mike was saying about voting, I don't necessarily think that they're going to go home and vote for somebody because they just saw them. But I think what those rallies do is it does mobilize the volunteers. And I think that that's where his base is in Yavapai.
So maybe it's more about like the campaign infrastructure, the ground game, than actually getting people to go home and fill out their ballots later that night or something like that.
I think that's where it matters, is getting your volunteers mobilized. And I think that that's what he's doing, is going to an area where he's accepted and she's going where she's accepted.
So, Mike, I'm curious about that because Chandler, at least at the legislative level, statewide level, we've seen that sort of becoming a more, I am loathe to get into the Pantone color palette here, but, you know, it's more of a purple area. Democrats have been kind of bullish on, you know, trying to win some legislative seats in that area. Was this an effort, do you think, by Vice President Harris to make some inroads in suburbia and try to get some of those folks out and maybe increase her chances here?
Yeah, definitely. I think that if you look at the Harris campaign over the last couple of months, they've actually gone into some areas that traditionally Democrats maybe don't go into. And again, I think what she's trying to do is expand her voting base. Whereas, again, as Regina just said, Trump's going to a very red county and talking to his base, and she's trying to expand beyond her base.
So I'm curious where each of you see the presidential race in Arizona right now. Obviously, early voting started this week. Ballots are in mailboxes or on people's kitchen tables or counters. Mike, the conventional wisdom has been this is going to be an extremely close race in Arizona again this time. There have been polls that have shown former President Trump ahead. There have been polls that have shown Vice President Harris ahead. How are you seeing things, you know, this, you know, at this point in the race?
I think it is very close. I think the presidential race in the swing states is going to be close. I think we're going to wait a number of days, probably before a winner is declared. And again, that's just the good or bad of being a swing state.
Do you have a gut feeling right now as to like which candidate might have the advantage in Arizona?
I don't.
Really? Okay. Regina, how do you agree?
I'm the same way. I don't have a gut feeling. I think we are a swing state, and this is why I think we have so much traffic coming through here right now, is I think they know whoever wins this state will probably be the president.
Well, and so it's interesting because, Regina, you said that you don't think it really matters, for example, if the candidates come. So we've also seen a lot of, you know, spouses and other surrogates come through town. Would you say those matter less than having the actual candidate? Like, is it less impactful for, you know, an actor or the wife of Tim Walz, for example, to come to Arizona, or, you know, even maybe J.D. Vance to come to Arizona, than it is for the top of the ticket to be here?
I think it needs to be the top of the ticket. I think these surrogates that are coming might pull in a little bit. If somebody really likes a movie star that comes in, they're going to go and listen to it, you know, and but I think it needs to be the top of the ticket here.
But that's where, again, we're talking about the margins here. We're talking about a very close race. So if a celebrity comes in and supports your candidate and you love that celebrity and maybe you were undecided, maybe that does tip the balance to you going to vote for that candidate because that celebrity came in. I think that's why you see the different types of people coming into Arizona and other states. Because, again, it's going to be very close, and on the off chance that that celebrity can move somebody, it's to your advantage.
Do you think the wives? I don't think necessarily, like, you know, having a somebody's wife come in and speak is going to change the voting.
I think they certainly can, because some of them aren't wives.
You're talking about the second gentleman, for example, who has been in Arizona, not, you know, not a ton, but not infrequently also.
Yeah. This becomes a personal issue for the voter. If Governor Walz's wife or the second gentleman former President Trump's wife shows up and that's the person that you admire, or that's the person that is going to move you from being undecided or maybe not voting to voting, then that's an important thing for the campaign.
So, Regina, I also want to ask you about early voting because, of course, last time around, former President Trump was very opposed to, for example, mail-in voting and drop boxes, and to an extent still is. And, you know, we saw Carrie Lake this week say she doesn't really love the, you know, mailing in ballots and doesn't really like drop boxes. Republicans sort of built up early voting over the years in this state, and as soon as President Trump said this isn't any good anymore, they stopped doing it. What are you expecting in terms of the turnout by early ballot versus Election Day voting from Republicans this time around?
I think you're still going to see a strong push for early voting. I used to vote on the day all the time. Now I do early voting. I go into a polling place and vote ahead of time. I don't do mail. I've never done mail. And I always thought it was my patriotic duty to do it on the day of the election. And so for me, I'm not particularly fond of early voting, but my whole family does that. They do mail-in ballots. And I think it's everybody's choice as far as what they do, as long as we have a safe election.
If you're doing it in person this year, you might want to set aside a couple hours to be there, though, because it's a pretty long ballot.
I usually do it ahead of time. So
okay, and then you bring it in.
Bring it in.
Okay,
it's done.
So, Mike, do you agree with Regina that you're going to see strong early vote, strong mail-in ballots, strong early voting, but maybe Democrats still have an early voting advantage as opposed to Election Day leaning more Republican?
I think so. The Trump campaign seems to be a little bit schizophrenic in saying that they support early voting and go do that, and then maybe not. So I think there's going to be a little bit of confusion there, but I do think that Democrats will have an edge on early voting.
So when we look at election night, both of you have said we're not going to know. I mean, the conventional wisdom is we're not going to know the winner on election night. It could be several days before the end. It would seem as though perhaps, you know, the Kamala Harris or Democrats might have that early advantage on election night, start to chip away as more those late earlies, people who bring their ballots on election day, and some of the other election day ballots are counted. Is that what you're expecting, Regina?
I am. I expect exactly that. So if you see coming in and they're both even, then Trump will probably go ahead at that point. If she's got a fairly large lead, I think you're going to still be waiting until the very end.
Could be. I mean, last time 4 years ago was still several days till we really knew who won. So guys, did you both watch the U.S. Senate debate this week?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Regina, what were your takeaways?
My takeaways were that Carrie Lake did win. Will it move the needle for her? I don't necessarily think it will. I think debates are again something to allow you to look at the candidate, but I don't know if it necessarily changes their mind. I did feel that Ruben was a little bit underprepared and didn't seem senatorial-like.
Do you think Carrie Lake seems senatorial?
I do. I think that what Carrie Lake has going for her is she was very confident. What she doesn't have going for her is she's very unapproachable. And so I think that those are the two things that people look at when they look at someone that's going to be leading them is have confidence but be approachable.
Mike, what do you think?
I think for the most part, debates don't really matter unless you tank like Biden did in the first Trump-Biden debate this cycle and like Trump did in the first Harris-Trump debate. And so if you are really bad, I think that moves the needle. If you're okay or you're great, I don't think it moves the needle, and I don't think this moved the needle at all.
Do you think either these candidates were terrible or great, or are they just both kind of okay?
Yeah, I don't think either of them were terrible or fantastic, and so it doesn't change the dynamic that Gallego is ahead in this race, and he's going to be the next U.S. senator.
So, Regina, I want to ask you about that because the polls have consistently shown Congressman Gallego ahead, some by more than others, obviously. But other than, I think, some internal polling from the National Senate Republican Committee and Lake's campaign, there haven't been any public polls that have shown her ahead.
No, there haven't. And I'm not a big pollster, but I think that when you have consistent polls, I think that's the way it's going to go. And it doesn't necessarily mean that he's the best candidate, because I think some of the votes are just against her and not for him. So I don't know. I think it's kind of the worst of the two evils, you know, the best of the two evils. It's, you know, you just pick the best one in the situation that you're at.
But that seems like that happens a lot, right? Like, I would imagine there are a lot of people who are going to vote for Lake because they don't like Gallego and vice versa.
Absolutely.
And people who are going to vote for Harris, not because they love her, but because they don't like Trump and vice versa on that as well.
Absolutely. And that's the way elections go. If you have two really good candidates, then I think they're voting for the candidates. If you have candidates that are divisive, like we have right now, I think these two are divisive. Our presidential candidates are very divisive. And I think what you have is there, you are voting against the other person.
Regina, do you think this was maybe a missed opportunity for, you mentioned how Carrie Lake is seen as unapproachable. There have been focus groups that say that, you know, there are people who just don't like her that much. Was this an opportunity for her to maybe, I don't want to say soften her image, because I think that has negative connotations, but to maybe come across as more approachable, to be seen as somebody, you know, the old line, who do you want to have a beer with? Like somebody like that?
It was an opportunity, and I think it was a missed opportunity. I think, like I said, she came across very confident, but still not approachable. And every public appearance you have to create that. If you are an approachable person, you don't have to act like it. you are, you know, and that makes a difference.
Mike, why do you think it is that the Senate race seems the margin at this point, if you believe the polls, is so much wider than the presidential race? Like, are there some large number of people who are planning to vote for Donald Trump and Ruben Gallego out there?
I think there's a possibility that that happens. I also think there's a possibility that there's a large number of folks that might vote for Trump that may not vote in that Senate race at all and skip it because they can't vote for Gallego but will not vote for Kari Lake. And so I do think there's some vote mixing and some vote skipping, if you will.
Was this in any way, do you think, an opportunity, a missed opportunity for Ruben Gallego to achieve anything or accomplish anything he needed to do to try to shore up his base or appeal to, you know, moderate Republicans, sort of McCain Republicans in his race?
No, I don't think Congressman Gallego missed any opportunity in this debate because, again, his campaign has been focused on veterans issues, the McCain Republicans and the Democratic base. And I think just being good in that debate was enough to keep that coalition together.
So, excuse me, Regina, this week we saw that a number of ASU students received a text message from the Harris campaign corresponding to the beginning of early voting. A former colleague of yours, State Senator Jake Hoffman, was critical of that, saying that the Harris campaign somehow got a hold of confidential student information that is protected by FERPA and, you know, promised to launch an investigation into that. I shouldn't say, of course, that is not actually the case. The information is publicly available. People buy it, as it turns out, fairly frequently. Why do you think it is that he was going after this particular message in this way?
Well, if you read what he said into it, he was upset because it was denied to Trump in a prior time. And in a prior election. And he said, you know, you got to keep the even keel. You got to give, if they're not going to give it to Trump, then you shouldn't give it to Kamala Harris. So I think that in that respect, I think he's right. You got to keep your priorities straight. And I think the universities, if they're going to do it for one, they have to do it for the other.
But that wasn't really the argument he made. The argument he made was that the Harris campaign got a hold of confidential information and was, you know, using it on these students who unwittingly.
Yeah, that was his original argument. And he probably will continue on knowing Jake Hoffman. He'll not let this go. So,
Does this matter at all, like in the scheme of things, Mike, or is this just kind of noise?
This is just noise. And again, you have to look at kind of where this came from. Did anyone deny the Trump campaign this information previously? I doubt it, since it's a public record. And so there are multiple ways that you can get this information. So is any of this true, or is it just a way to say, I'm going to go after the universities in a hearing because that helps my base? That's what they want. That's red meat for them. But it's all a non-issue.
Would you expect this to come up come January in the legislative session when he's talking about budgets or anything related to the universities?
Absolutely.
You do.
Again, anytime the universities sneeze, there's going to be some sort of an investigation about it.
All right. So, guys, something that happened right around this time last week, about a minute or so after we went off the air with the show last Friday, we got the word from the state Supreme Court allowing Prop 140. This is the open primaries initiative, would be allowed to stay on the ballot. This has, of course, gone back and forth. There was question about whether people would be allowed to vote for it, but maybe those votes wouldn't count depending on how the court case turned out. Mike, I'm curious, A, what you make of sort of all the legal machinations on this, and then, you know, the impact of ultimately having this on the ballot and having the votes counted for it.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of times there are legal machinations around a lot of these initiatives that get signatures and file, and then somebody sues. The interesting thing is that this dragged out so long, and the Supreme Court allowed it to drag on this long. So now that it's on the ballot, we'll have to see if the campaign has the resources to do what it needs to do to get people to vote yes, and if there's a no campaign. The interesting thing is, you know, the legislature anticipated that this would make the ballot and did put on another initiative dealing with elections. I think, again, just to confuse the issue, and we'll have to see how those two things play out together.
Regina, do you think that by having to fight this ongoing legal fight, does that make it more difficult for the supporters of Prop 140 to get their message out, either because of time or because of other resources like money?
I do. I think it has really hampered them quite a bit. It did bring it up to the surface because of the Supreme Court dragging on so long. And I agree with Mike as far as, you know, that should have never happened, that you either make a decision or you don't make a decision. You don't let that drag on.
Like before the ballots are printed.
Before the ballots are printed. Yeah, absolutely. But I think now it does hamper the Prop 140 people and how they're going to go progress on. I'm kind of curious if both that one and Prop, what is it, 132?
130-something, I think.
Yeah, the one that's anti-ranked voting. What happens if they both pass?
I think the one with the most votes wins, right? That's how it works. But it'd be interesting if they both pass, right?
Yeah.
Because voters are basically saying the complete opposite thing.
Yes. That means the voters are confused.
Yeah.
The other interesting thing, again, is, and this is beyond Prop 140, but all of these propositions, because they're going to be on the very back of a very long ballot, and the presidential races, the Senate races, the congressional races are all spending so much money. I mean, you can't turn on your television without hearing consecutive ads for these campaigns. How do they pierce through that noise and deliver their message? Because some of these ballot issues are complicated. And so how do they actually get that message out in all of this other political spending?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. We have a ton of TVs out in the newsroom, and it's like constantly at, like, you know, every quarter hour or so, it's going to be a ton of TV ads for political campaigns. All right, we'll have to leave it there. Mike Haner, Regina Cobb, thanks you both for coming in. Thanks for the conversation.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.